ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Just before we begin our discussion with Nick, I will say that any advice that Nick gives is of a general nature. Of course, you know, for your own situation, just, you know, talk to somebody who knows your situation. Nick is here to answer your questions. And please feel free to call 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222. Nick, good evening.
Good evening, Rod Quinn. Lovely to be with you again.
Well, look, I'm pretty jealous. You're in Darwin at the moment. Now, obviously, there are problems in Darwin, and our hearts go out to the people of Darwin at the moment, because there's a boiled water alert has been issued for Darwin and its surrounding areas due to the flooding of the Darwin River Dam. Residents on Monday, yesterday, were urged to reduce their water usage. So just be aware of that. But what are you doing there?
Oh, well, as some describe it quite appropriately, as the gem of the north. But it's, as you say, a very damp gem at the moment, thanks to the rainfall, which is spread across the top end of Australia at the moment, Rod. So there's plenty of people affected by it. And my heart goes out to them. So we are pretty much stuck in a hotel up here in Darwin. But I'm here, Rod, for a special event as a guest of the Association of Independent Retirees of the Northern Territory. Now, this is a not-for-profit group, and we're doing a session on Saturday. It's a workshop about how to prepare for retirement. And basically, it's for someone coming up to retirement or perhaps already in retirement, and it's basically taking you through the entire Australian retirement system, which sounds dreadfully complicated for most people, but when you have it broken down into little blocks of knowledge, then it's easy to navigate. So that's what it's all about, 2 hours. Right, $25 includes lunch. You can, it's a bargain. Wow. Yeah.
What, chicken so sandwiches or what?
Oh, I reckon it's a light lunch for $25. For 2 hours in there. But if you head along, if you're in the area and perhaps or heading into Darwin, airnt.org is the website.
Okay, we should just point out AirNT is not an airline that you're plugging.
Oh,
that is the
point,
Association
yes.
of Independent Retirees.
Retirees, that's it. Yeah, exactly. There probably was an AirNT one day, but or many years ago, but certainly that's not what it is now. So, yes, Association of Independent Retirees, not for profit group up here. Some lovely people, all Territorians, obviously, and yeah, very keen to get some new members along. So hopefully it all works out.
Okay. I think the NT in AirNT ended up in Qantas, but anyway, that's a different matter.
Oh, it did too.
Yes. And, you know, and look, I'm not going to keep reading out these texts, but very nice one saying nice to have you back. But I love this one. This tells you everything you need to know. Sorry, just tuned in. Where is Phil? Who are you? So there you go. Go away for a year and people forget you. Phil is away tonight and tomorrow. He will be back on Thursday. Okay. The announcement today from the Prime Minister about changes to super, that the this tax will come in for those who have more than between $3 and $10 million, and then another tax or a greater tax if you've got more than $10 million. It's been coming for a long time. We will talk about it a little bit in the next hour, but your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so this was quite a controversial tax when it was announced a budget or two ago, and basically the government was proposing imposing an extra 15% tax on superannuation funds, which grew at a level above $3 million. So all the earnings were going to be taxed, whether or not you actually had the cash to pay it. So very controversial, Rod, and basically the government's backed down. So the new Division 296 tax reform basically sees that $3 million threshold. And as you said, a super balance that's higher than $3 million will be taxed at 30%. Above $10 million, it's going to be taxed at 40%. Those numbers are actually indexed. So the $3 million and $10 million thresholds are indexed to the Consumer Price Index. Bottom line for most people, and this is $3 million per person, Rod, so we're not talking like a self-managed super fund with $3 million, so a couple potentially could have $6 million in super before they even have to think about this tax. And to be honest, I don't know too many people. There'll be some of our listeners that will be affected, but I don't know
too many
people.
It's about 90,000 people in Australia. $3 million.
Well, yeah.
You don't reckon there's 90,000 people with well, $3 million plus? Seems a lot.
It is a lot of money to have in super. And probably there are, what are we now, 26 million people in the country, so there's a chance, I guess. But certainly most of our listeners, I would expect, aren't going to be impacted by this tax. simply because, A, it's a $3 million threshold, and secondly, because it's indexed. So that means every year that $3 million goes up a little bit more. And I know the government's hoping to raise a bit of revenue off it, but certainly vastly different to what was originally proposed. Okay. And to be perfectly honest, most people have calmed down as a result of these changes.
Okay, so if you have 2.9 million or whatever, and the interest that's generated on it is going to take you over the 3 million. Is it like on June 30, you have to have less than 3 million, in which case on June 29, you could go out and buy a car or something?
No. Well, unlike the old version of the tax, which was based on the total superannuation balance, this is going to be taxed like any normal superannuation fund. So it's going to be all about the earnings of the super fund. So if the super fund's simply grown in value because the shares have gone up or the property's gone up, you're not going to be paying the tax. The tax is only when the actual earning or, you know, the growth has been realized. So that's another fundamental difference in the structure of the tax this time around. Okay. So as I say, it will impact some people. But, you know, the numbers, I think, okay, the government's saying 90,000, but that will probably not grow that much given that these numbers are going to be indexed.
Okay. So how much tax should someone be paying on $3 million?
Well, if you had $3 million in sort of other investments and stuff, and this is the attractiveness of superannuation, because once you hit that $3 million, well, even up to $3 million, you're paying a maximum of 15% tax on the earnings. If you're over 60 years of age, Rod, any money you take out of superannuation, no matter how much we're talking about, whether it's $5 or $5,000, is completely free of tax once you hit 60 years of age. For people that are in a position where they can roll some of their money into a thing called an account-based pension, which is what most people do, the amount of money you can have in one of those funds is actually $2 million. Now, a bit of news for everyone. That's going up to $2.1 million on the 1st of July. Now, the money that's in that account-based pension fund is completely tax-free on the earnings. So we're telling you that, you know, there's no 15% tax on the earnings. There's zero tax on the earnings up to that $2.1 million figure from July 1. So, you know, that's why superannuation is so attractive. If you had that $3 million invested in property or a share portfolio or whatever, and it's generating income, then all that income is going to be absolutely taxable at your normal marginal rate. You know, it's going to depend on what sort of income it generates as to what sort of tax you'll be paying. But that's why the superannuation system is so attractive to people, because we basically end up paying less tax.
All righty. We will take some calls in just a moment, 1-300-800-222. We'll talk to Matt in a moment. And we want your texts as well, 0467-922-702. Got some interesting questions there. So hang on, Tom in Victoria, and also Greg will answer your questions. Let's go to Matt first. Nick Bruning is our guest on Nightlife. You're with Rod Quinn. Matt, good evening.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Yeah, I got a potential windfall coming up, sort of $50,000-$70,000. Self-employed, married, three teenage kids. Don't know a lot on the property. Maybe $110,000. Got a vehicle loan about $50,000 for business. But being self-employed, I haven't paid myself over for a while, probably 5 or 6 years. So yeah, wondering what the best option there is, mate.
Sure, Matt. So can I ask your age?
45.
Oh, young bloke. Okay, so all good. Look, there's a couple of things that you could look at. I mean, the purely technical answer would be to get rid of the mortgage as quickly as you can. Yeah, I guess so. Less so with the business debt, because that's got some tax benefits associated with it. But would your total superannuation balance be less than $500,000 at the moment?
Well, probably, yeah. Probably half that.
Yeah, okay, great. So that's a very significant number, because what it allows you to do is to make a one-off payment into superannuation, which we call a concessional contribution. Now, the concessional contribution rules say that if your balance is under $500,000, not only can you put in this year's amount, which happens to be $30,000 that you could dump in and claim as a tax deduction, but you can also bring up the last 5 years that you haven't used. So potentially you could be putting in more than 160 grand as a single one-off tax deductible contribution to super. Now, why that's good, being self-employed, and are you a tradie that's sort of making the killing, a sparky or something like that?
No, actually in the agricultural game, but
okay. Yeah, yep. All right. Doing okay. So having a reasonably good year, well, then you could potentially, reduce your tax quite significantly by making that one-off payment to superannuation. Now, it's going to be subject to this thing called a 15% contributions tax. But if you compared the 15% contributions tax to what you might have paid in tax on the income, you're probably going to be way ahead by paying the money into super. Of course, the main thing you also have to think about is how much you've got to make sure you've got enough money to pay the bills, my friends. That's the downside of paying everything into
super. I mean, the thing about getting a windfall like that, and you think, great, I'm getting a lot of money, I'd love to buy myself something, but you've got to look ahead and think, well, okay, in 20 years' time or 15 years' time, it's going to be worth a lot more.
Absolutely.
Contributing to my wife in superannuation as well.
You could. The same rules apply for your good lady. So if she has a taxable income, then you could perhaps split it between the two. And depending on what your accountant does at the end of the year, he or she may allocate it between the two of you equally. So it might be worth having a quick word with the accountant to find out which is the best person to receive the contribution. But if she has a similar balance, she can absolutely use exactly the same trick. So the key is, A, make sure that you've got kept out of there to pay the bills. Yeah, and then the second thing is a contribution to super. Yeah, so that's going to be great. And, 45 years, it's kind of at that period in life where I'm saying, well, you can start looking at superannuation. I'm a bit wary of people in their 30s making heavy use of super, simply because of what we call the legislative risk, and that is that the rat bags will change the rules that's on the way through by the time we get to retirement age. But certainly at 45, it's a strategy to have a good look at. And look, the other thing to do is there's no need to get involved in complicated superannuation funds. Some of these low-cost funds that are out there would be perfectly suited to what you're trying to do, so don't get talked into setting up self-managed funds or anything like that.
All righty. Good luck with it, Matt.
Yeah, thanks a lot, boys.
Talk to your accountant. It's always good advice too. Thanks very much. Nick Bruning is our guest. Now, Tom in Victoria says, I've been told that you should pay tax on the full pension even though I have no other revenue streams. No super, says Tom. So what's the situation about paying tax on the full pension?
It's absolutely right. It is most of it's taxable income, Rod. So the payment that a pensioner gets at the moment, a single person, for example, gets around about $1,180 per fortnight. A big chunk of that is actually taxable income and goes on your tax return. The other bits are things like supplements for pharmaceuticals and telephones and stuff. Most of that's completely tax-free. However, when you get to retirement age, there's a special tax credit or tax offset that kicks in. And that's worth, it's worth quite a bit. So the bottom line is that if you're a single person that's over 67 years of age, you can earn $35,813 per year before you're liable for tax or Medicare levy. So for someone that's simply on a full pension and that's all they're receiving, the full pension is around about $30,000. I'll talk about it going up in a minute, but it's about $30,000 a year at the moment. So that's about $5,000 less than that point that you'd be paying tax. It means that you could be earning, $5,000-$6,000 from investments, bank interest, share dividends, something like that, and it would, before you'd have to pay tax. It's another reason why we love superannuation. I said at the outset of talking about this new tax. And anyone over 60, when they take money out of super, it's completely tax exempt. So that literally means that if you've set yourself up with, an account-based pension, one of these tax-free things that pays you a regular payment per fortnight or per month, not 1 cent of it is taxable. So there's no way you would ever get to that $35,000 if your income was made up of the full pension and some money perhaps from an account-based pension or super. Okay. So that's how it works. So hopefully, Tom, that puts your mind at ease, you should be okay.
All right. I just respond to here's a text from Fred from Belmont. He says, Dear Philip, it's Rod, but that's okay. With the medium super balance of PAYG Australia workers less than $100,000, why do you present an hour show on the superannuation tax changes for the elite super rich? Fred, I'll just take this one if that's all right. This is not an hour show on the elite super rich superannuation tax changes. Anyone can call. Matt from WA does. He's not one of the elite super rich. I'm not. No one is that has texted in so far, Fred. So that's just the. That is, it's called news. It happened today. So that's why we're talking about it. There's other things we need to get to. So, Fred, I appreciate your thought, but it is not just about the elite super rich. Now, someone else says, do you know how the new system will work out with defined benefit schemes? And you might want to just add on that because you mentioned the Medicare levy, how a defined benefit scheme works with the Medicare levy if you're only paying, you know, a very small amount in tax.
Yeah. So the short answer to the defined benefit stuff is I actually don't know. There you go, Rod, you got me. Look, the defined benefit funds are basically for people that perhaps work for the public service, generally Commonwealth public servants and some state public servants. These are generally people that are already in the system and operating. I would expect it probably doesn't affect them, to be honest, Rod. I would think that if it's a private superannuation pension scheme, you're probably not affected by this tax because, again, unless your notional balance is above $3 million, it's unlikely to affect you. And again, it's on the earnings of the fund. So I wouldn't lose too much sleep over that.
What now, about the Medicare levy?
Okay, so what was the question again, Rod?
Well, when it comes to if you have a defined benefit and you're only paying a minimal amount of tax. Yeah. Do you pay the Medicare levy?
You do. So that's formed part of your taxable income. But for most, it's quite messy because different states and different schemes operate differently. Some elements of a defined benefit scheme have what we call a deductible amount, which comes off the gross payment. Some also have a tax rebate, which is a tax credit that applies. But generally speaking, yes, the amount is going to be assessable income and therefore subject to the Medicare levy. And again, the same thresholds apply if you're over 65 or 67, $35,813 if you're single. And if you're a couple, the threshold is $31,888 each. So combined, okay, we're talking an income of about $63,000, $64,000 before you're up for tax or Medicare levy.
All right. Go to Julie and Maruba in just a moment, but Greg says, I have a super fund of $800,000 in pension mode. The advisor charges me $550 a month. I thought this was a lot, so I asked the super fund what they would charge. It was actually more per month to manage the pension fund. Any comments?
Yeah, so look, it's one of my bugbears, Rod, is fees and charges sometimes imposed on people with, well, look, that's a sizable balance, $800,000 per in superannuation. So, you know, well, $6,000 a year. So we're talking fees of sort of getting up to sort of, you know, 0.7%. Now, if that's the only fee that's being charged, and we're talking about what the super fund's charging and the advisor's charging, then that's not unreasonable because your big low-cost industry funds, for example, are charging somewhere in that range, sort of 0.5 to 0.6. But if that 0.7 or whatever it is, the $550 per month, is on top of the investment fees that you're paying and the operation of the super fund fees, and that's sort of piled on top, then you start to ask questions, okay, well what am I going to be getting for my money for $6,000 a year? And what I find is that some financial advisors basically are providing a service where all they're doing is looking after the investments, okay? So, yes, you know, they tell you when to move out of this asset and move into the other. Okay, that's $6,000 perhaps. I would think that for $6,000 per year, I would want a financial advisor. At $800,000, you would be eligible for a Centrelink pension. Absolutely, certainly you would be. And that advisor should be providing you full-on advice about that, even down to applying for the pension on your behalf, because the good financial advisors that are working in this space, Rod, have actually got access to Centrelink systems on behalf of their clients. So they can be doing the regular updates to Centrelink and doing all sorts of stuff. So it really does become a very sort of guide you through the whole process of retirement rather than a, you know, see you once every 2 years and we'll still clip you $6,000 a year in fees. So, yeah, it's, as I say, it's my my soapbox issue.
Okay.
It's all about getting value for money out of, you know, look, there's people out there that are listening to just paying $2 million with 1% fees. That's $20,000 a year. I'd want someone mowing my lawns every
Yes,
Saturday,
exactly man. Right. Oh, Greg adds, sorry, I have a $1 million apartment he rents out.
Oh, well, good on him. So I'm not quite sure Well, he wouldn't qualify for a pension. There you go. There you go. He's doing all right. Yep.
All right. Julie in Maroubra. Good morning. Good evening, Julie.
Good morning and good evening.
Yes.
Hello, gentlemen. I am a 68-year-old retiree on one of those wonderful defined benefit schemes, and I also have other investments, so I'm very comfortable. I only have one child, and she's married with three children, and she works as a self-employed psychologist. So my question is this. She's only got about 45, maybe 50,000 in super. Her husband has significantly more, probably more around the 300, possibly 350. And I'm wondering what to do with a couple of hundred thousand I've got sitting in the bank. I'm very fortunate, I know that, and sometimes I hate ringing into these shows because I know people are
That's
not
fine.
As fortunate.
We are here to help you, Julie, just the same as everybody else. Don't worry about it.
I know, but still. So I'm wondering, I thought of a couple of options. I mean, one obviously is I could set up a family trust, but I wondered whether I might just possibly, one option is put some money into her super because she's going to inherit it all anyway, or maybe put some more money into her mortgage. She already has some of my money as a, an offset against their mortgage.
Yep.
Possibly is buy an investment property in her name. I'm just wondering, of those options, do you have a clear choice that you would be heading towards?
Well, look, there's a few things that I'd be digging into a little bit further. And I will give you out, Rod, and my phone number afterwards, just in case you want to get rid of it to us, you know.
I would love that.
I would donate it to charity, by the way, Julie, because
I am. I significantly do that already,
Glad to hear it. Well, it's lovely that you're sharing it around with other people and particularly your daughter. So there's a few options that you could look at. By all means, you could give it to your daughter or to the kids or whatever. You could conceivably set up a trust for the grandies where So what you could do is perhaps set up some investment funds with your daughter as the trustee. It's called a bare trust arrangement. You don't normally have to get lawyers and stuff involved. Most of the stockbrokers, the sort of the reputable stockbrokers, have these kinds of arrangements where mum goes on there as the owner and then the child goes on as the beneficiary, if you like. The beaut part about that is providing mum doesn't access the money or do anything with franking credits herself, when the child hits 18 years of age, those assets can be transferred to the child without capital gains tax implications, right? So in effect, the child gets all the benefits of those shares or whatever you've bought, and then they can head off and sort of use it to pay for their first home deposit or pay the uni fees or whatever it is that they decide to do. So that's one option. The second option would be, yes, to give it to your daughter, again, to move it off the offset. Technically, that's probably a very good option simply because, interest rates are going up and likely to head up even further in the near future. That's absolutely money saved. The rider to that would be that hopefully she would do something sensible with the money they're saving in terms of the mortgage payments, perhaps accelerate the mortgage even further so they knock that off even sooner. And then the income from the mortgage payments is freed up and then she could perhaps redirect it into super. And your third option would be to give it to her. She could make a contribution to superannuation. If her super balance is less than $500,000, as I was explaining to Matt at the start of the show, then she could claim a tax deduction for, several tens of thousands of dollars. It would be about $165 less what work has already paid in, but that could be a significant tax deduction. That's pretty good because that's also, when it's in superannuation, it's protected from creditors. So if something ever happened to her and her partner in terms of business and things went pear-shaped or something like that, generally speaking, creditors can't access superannuation assets. The one rider I would put, I'm not delving hopefully too deeply, one of the questions I would ask if you were sitting across in front of me is the relationship pretty solid between your daughter and her husband? And because in this day and age, we do need to weigh in family breakups and what the implications of those sort of.
And that's why you start thinking about giving the money to the grandchildren.
Well, not only is it solid, but I'm a pragmatist. I saw my solicitor and I got the mortgage registered what did he do? He did something to protect my daughter's interests.
Okay.
That I loaned the money. Yep. I loaned the money and it was registered, I think.
Lovely. And,
I love my son-in-law and I trust them, but you never know.
Julie, you're a very sensible lady and it sounds like you're all sorted. Good on you.
Thanks very much.
With the defined benefit scheme, you do pay the Medicare levy. That's what I recall on my tax return.
Julie, thank you very much for that, Julie in Maroubra. We've got a lot of people with questions. Let's try and get to a lightning round before we get to David in Delaney's Creek.
I'll keep them short, Rod.
Francis in Avoca Beach says, if I sell my investment property, can I put some money in super as a non-concessional? I'll be 71, so would I have to pass the work test?
No, you don't. That's the good thing that changed a few years ago. The work test for everyone else's benefit is if you want to make a concessional contribution to super when you're claiming a tax deduction and you're over 67 years of age and up to 75 years of age, you need to satisfy a work test that says you've worked more than 40 hours in a 30-day consecutive period in the year that you're making the contribution. So a non-concessional is where you don't need to satisfy the work test. You can also make use of a neat trick called the bring forward rule, and that says that you can bring up to three future or this year and two future years of contributions. And in other words, a one-off payment of three times $120,000 or $360,000 into super in a single hit. And Rod, good news, that's going up on the 1st of July too.
Okay.
Bit of news for people. That's going up to 390,000. So
okay.
There you go.
Well, alrighty.
A scoop for nightlife.
Thank you. Well, scoop. And this is Nightlife. You're with Rod Quinn in for Philip Clark tonight. Nick Bruning is with us as well. Talking superannuation, if you've got a question, 1-300-800-222. You can text 0467-922-702. Can I ask, says someone, of course, if I am 60 years old and stop working, can I take all my super out or only some of it?
Okay, so these are things that we call conditions of release. And superannuation concept is it's there for our retirement. So there's very strict rules regarding access until you get to sort of retirement age. The first point, if you potentially can access as 60 years of age, and the law says that you must cease gainful employment since turning 60. So if you are working on your 60th birthday and you stop working after you turn 60, then you have ticked that box. So you can absolutely access all of your superannuation if that's what you want to do. One of the neat little tricks of this particular rule is that it doesn't say in the legislation that you have to cease your main job. It talks about ceasing any gainful employment since turning 60. So what some people do, Rod, is they continue doing some work and they might want access to super to sort of get rid of the mortgage or something or set themselves up for Centrelink. You can work part-time somewhere for maybe a couple of weeks or months or whatever, quit that job and you've ticked the box to access your super. So that's a pretty neat little trick that some people use, and certainly it's something that we talk about. Yep.
Joey in Coffs Harbour, everything seems skewed in favour of couples over singles. Should I get myself a fella?
Now, look, it's true. It's absolutely true. And there's so many sort of...
I'll ask another question, then you can link it in here. Is it true that a couple who have lived together, travelled together, socialised together, supported each other in times of crisis for 30-plus years can claim to be singles if they keep their finances separate, have no kids and are not married? They have generous assets but are assessed as singles for the age pension. Seems like a marriage certificate is financial punishment, says Anonymous.
Right, so Anonymous is wrong. So basically, Centrelink have they do have some conditions regarding singles living under the same roof. And sometimes, Rod, there are situations where a relationship can break down, and it's just not financially viable for people to split up. Right?
Okay, hang on, just on that. Sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm. But what if you are not in a romantic relationship? What if you are just friends living together? How do you prove?
Then you can absolutely do it. No, well, Centrelink will investigate, so you'll need third-party verification. So if you're two people living under the same roof, Centrelink will want to ask questions about your individual circumstances and digging into bank accounts and all sorts of things about how the relationship works, and they generally are looking for third-party verification of that domestic arrangement, if you like. So under those circumstances, you can absolutely have two singles living under the same roof and you're separately treated under Centrelink's income and asset test and you would both qualify for the single rate of age pension. What I was alluding to before is sometimes a relationship breaks down And you are forced to stay under the same roof simply because of the cost of living somewhere else. And again, Centrelink will recognise that. So it's all about how you've got things set up. But, you know, they're kind of onto it. If you think you're just going to sort of go in there and say, oh, we're single now, it's not quite as easy as that. So rest assured that the taxpayers' dollars is being looked after here, right?
Okay. We've got David in Delaney's Creek. Hello, David.
Hello, Rod. How's Philip?
Thank you. We've got Nick Brewing
here.
He's Nick. I'm Rod. He's David. David, what's your question, mate?
So I've had a strategy for, 10, 12, 15 years. My wife is in defined benefit. She's a teacher for Education Queensland. Locked in, solid, we know that. So I've had a bit of a punt. I went out on the self-managed super fund path. I ended up buying two residential properties. One I bought outright, one I bought with an LRBA, a limited recourse borrowing arrangement. I have just sold, I retired, I'm 61 years old. I retired September last year. I've sold the unencumbered property and taken that in, paid off the LRBA on the encumbered property. So I'm now at the point where I need, this is complex, I'm sorry. I need the their trust to collapse so that the ownership of the property can transition to the main trust fund. But then once I'm done, once that's happened, my wife and I will buy the second property, the one that was encumbered, and we're going to live there. We're going to sell our PPR, and buy the second property off my self-managed super. At that point, I want to transition the self-managed. I want to get rid of the self-managed super.
This is starting to get very confusing, David.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know what, David? I reckon I'm kind of disappointed I didn't bring my invoice book along to Darwin. But anyway, so the bottom line. Here's where we are, right? I understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to wrap the self-managed super fund up. And that's the key to this. And there's a lot of people that are running self-managed super funds through their working lives. And they get to retirement and say, you know what? I just want to be able to sit on a beach somewhere and get a sunburnt backside and not have to worry about my self-managed super funds. So your accountant and your your financial guy will be able to tell you. But what you basically end up doing is you'll be moving the money potentially into what we call retirement phase, so you'll minimise the amount of tax. All the collapsing of trusts and stuff will be basically, here, sign this form, Dave, sign that form there, and you'll end up with a hopefully an amount in cash parked in your self-managed super fund. From that point, that's when you start looking at some of the alternatives out there, and that's when we're looking at low-cost simplicity. Do you know roughly how much you're going to end up with it when it's all sorted out, Dave? Is it a couple of mil or is it 200,000? Right, between the two of you, yourself, and is your wife interested in the defined benefit scheme? That's just yours. Yeah, okay.
No, that's just me.
Yep, so you can move that to any super fund, low-cost fund out there.
So I have maintained an account in QSuper.
Yep.
With a very low balance. So my intent is to just get my accountant to do a rollover.
To roll it into there. Yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
That sounds like
as easy as that.
Good idea is to talk to your accountant about it.
I just want to know, are there any pitfalls?
No. Look, it sounds like a very sensible strategy, and the key part I like is the fact that you're thinking of getting out of this.
Sensible.
Right, David. Good luck with it, David. I appreciate it.
Hopefully his wife's listening, but right?
The good thing is David does have an accountant, so thanks very much for that, by the way.
Well, it's very complicated.
Okay, we got a lot of calls and texts we're going to get to, Nick. By the way, we have breaking news too. The Iranian Lionesses have left Sydney flying on the Malaysian Airlines flight to Kuala Lumpur, so they have left Australia. A 70-year-old couple with $850,000 in cash and a self-managed super fund, each receiving a part pension. Should we keep it in that fund with accounting fees or put it in personal accounts and term deposits?
Probably wouldn't do that simply because of the tax implications there. But at $850,000, I'm presuming it's split down the middle with our texter, there's a good chance that they could move it into, again, one of these low-cost funds. It's probably not worth keeping it in a self-managed fund with that sort of amount, and particularly want to simplify things. But absolutely look at some, have a good look at some of those other schemes that are out there. There's plenty of good ones. You get the flexibility and you kind of still want a bit of growth in your super. Sticking it in the bank is okay when we're currently getting about 4.5%, 5%, but those interest rates won't stay up there forever, hopefully. And you'll be wanting to get probably a better rate of return than you get in a bank account.
All right. Jane says, I've been on Centrelink payments for 3 years due to health reasons, hence no superannuation contributions. What can I do? We don't know how old Jane is.
No, so presumably Jane's on a disability support pension, which is the same rate as the age pension. So we're talking $1,178. That goes up for everyone's benefit to $1,200 Friday week. So we're seeing a $22 increase or $24 increase there in the Centrelink pension rate. So when you have money, the only thing that you can possibly look at is if you've got money in superannuation, that's not taken into account by Centrelink until you get to age pension age. It's a question of whether there's surplus cash flow, because to be perfectly honest, Rod, if our person's on just a straight disability support pension, it's pretty rough. It's pretty hard. So it'll be about if there's any surplus income. I think what we really need to know is there surplus income and how much, and then we can perhaps talk about some alternatives.
Okay. With a defined benefit super pension, does Centrelink use for determining age pension qualification the yearly pensioner's income or the total super value deemed amount, says Ian? You might want to talk about deeming rules now too.
I can, yeah. So just so everyone understands how Centrelink operate, they have two tests, an asset test and an income test, and whichever test produces the lowest pension is the one that Centrelink will latch onto. Now, it's one of the quirks and one of the benefits of having a public service superannuation scheme, Rod, is that the account balance in a defined benefit fund is ignored, which is fantastic if you're on one of those benefits. So the only thing that many of these people need to think about is the income test. The income test basically says that you can have income, if you're a single, of up to $218 per fortnight, and if you're a couple of combined, $380 per fortnight, until your pension starts to reduce at the rate of 50 cents per dollar. I can tell you that thanks to the increase in the rates from Friday week, the amount of money that you can earn per fortnight for a single will be quite, I think, generous, $2,619 a fortnight before you'd lose the pension under the income test, and for couples a combined $4,000 a fortnight before you lose the pension under the income test if you're a couple. Now, getting back to our question, the defined benefit depends on which one it is again. Some defined benefits have what we call a deductible amount. Now, it's not huge, but it could be a proportion of your fortnightly payment that Centrelink will ignore off the income test. There will be a schedule that you can get from your defined benefit provider, which will tell you exactly how much that is, and whether you're a single or a couple. The same sort of income test system applies. You have that income-free area, and then your pensions will start to be clipped by at the rate of 50 cents for every dollar over. So, again, dependent on it, but that's how the system works.
All right. Paulina from Greenwich says, can you please explain more carefully the rule you spoke about if you stop working at 60 and can access all of your super?
Okay. So we're talking about conditions of release. So for most people, it's going to be dreadful things like total and permanent disability or death up to the age of 60. Once you get to 60, the legislation says that if you've ceased gainful employment since turning 60, you can access your superannuation. My point that I was making was the legislation doesn't specify cease your main line of work. It talks about ceased gainful employment since turning 60. So if you're in a situation where you've stopped work and you're not working, then obviously you can access your super once you turn 60. But for someone that's got sort of continuing with a job, if they started another job and then finished that other job after turning 60, then you would tick the box and be able to access your super. And you know, it's a great strategy if you're
trying to reduce. Okay, but you have to earn a certain amount. Well, like, it's gainful. You can't go more than a certain amount.
No, no, it's voluntary. You don't owe any amount. You could take out the entire super balance, Rod.
Okay. So you can take it out.
Yep.
Have that entire super balance and then...
Well, that'd be silly, pretty silly, unless you're going to do something very sensible with it, like pay off your mortgage.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Yeah. So that's what tends to happen. So if you're lucky enough to have a sizable balance in your super, you might have $100,000 owing on the mortgage. You know, you take that $100,000 off and pay off the mortgage and leave the rest in the super. Because then if you take it all out and decide, oh, my Lord, I shouldn't have done that, then you're going to be subject
okay,
to
okay, let's assume you take it all out, mm-hmm. you buy something with it, you have no super left, you can then access the pension?
No, because then you've got that other accessible asset. But if you took all the money out and bought your family home, assuming you're not a home buyer, then that home is specifically exempt. And in fact, it is a strategy that we talk about. So you could perhaps upgrade your family home, get something that's more retirement ready, take some money out of superannuation, combine it with the proceeds of your first home to buy your new home. And because you've reduced your Centrelink accessible assets, you absolutely might qualify for a full or part pension for the first time.
But if you've been renting, for example, you do not own a home, you then get your pension, get your super, rather. You get all your super, go and buy what is called a family home.
Absolutely.
Then you get the pension.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Let's talk to Paul.
Go. Hey, Rod, I reckon you've got another career.
Paul in Blacktown, hello. Last thing anyone wants to hear is advice from me. Paul, good day.
Hey, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Yes. Hello? Yes. This is about a redundancy payment.
It is, yes. So a close friend of mine at work, he's turning 67 in August. We are all getting made redundant at a large warehouse. Here in Western Sydney, between August and then of January of the following year, so 27. His payment is expected to be around that $200,000 to $250,000. His concern is he can't get an exact answer, something about the difference between like voluntary and then involuntary, and something about being of that age of 67, and... how much tax that you will definitely get.
So what we're talking about are what we call bona fide redundancy payments, and there's a special tax ruling, if you like, that says you can get, I can't remember what the number is now, it's about $6,000 or $7,000, and then another, you know, $1,500 to $2,000 for every year that you've worked there. But generally speaking, once you hit retirement age, you're probably not going to qualify for the bona fide redundancy clauses. So it might be about that. I'm not absolutely certain. So hopefully, if he actually gives the ATO a call on 132861, 132861, he can talk to one of the tax people and just get the actual answer, because it's probably going to be about the date that he actually receives the payment. That all said, even if it comes through as a payment that's partly taxable, he could potentially look at making a contribution to superannuation, depending on his superannuation balance, and get rid of a lot of the tax anyway. So there's a couple of strategies that could be explored, but it's going to be, I think, dependent on the actual day that he gets made redundant and his age on that day.
Sorry. Yeah, he has said he does want to keep working, so he'll go past the age of 67. Is this age of 67 something about being taxed more or taxed less? Has that got anything to do with
it's the fact
that we're just getting misinformation from a lot of people.
Well, 67 is a significant age simply because all sorts of things kick in as far as the tax office is concerned. So we're talking about a thing called the Seniors and Pensioners Tax Offset, and certainly full access to your superannuation. And that's another a tax office or superannuation law. So it's all about saying that you've reached retirement. So I'm just not sure if the law says something like, well, if you hit retirement age, you're not going to be working anyway as far as we're concerned, and therefore you're not entitled to the tax concessions. You know? All
right. We're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid, Paul, but good luck to you and your friend. Yeah. That's right, because there's a couple other texts we've got to get to. Carmen says, I'm 73, still working. I want to retire. I have $600,000 in super. My fund wants me to make a decision of what to invest my money in, low risk or medium risk. What do you think? I mean, that is Carmen, a decision Carmen's going to have to make.
Yeah, Carmen, and particularly with all this turmoil we're going through at the moment, Rod, it is quite stressful for some people. Yep. Look, I would like to think that by the time we get to retirement, we're in a position where we can start to back off in terms of the risk. So things like the capital stable, the conservative option, those are the sorts of terms that most super funds use. what you end up with, basically 70% of the money is going to be invested in pretty safe things, and about 30% would be invested in those growth areas like shares.
And you can choose. You can choose how much of your money wants to high risk, low risk, medium risk.
Exactly. But the capital stable is a safe sort of approach to things, and that's sort of a simple way to do it. One point I would make, it's a very good idea to have about a year's worth of payments in the cash option, and that's where you would take your payments from. And the idea, and we've spoken about it a few times on the show, is when the markets are up, you take the profits you've made in that other part and put it back into the cash part, right? So that's where your payments are coming from. And when it's tumultuous like we are at the moment, you sit tight, Rod, because no one knows what's going to happen next.
Okay.
When things settle down,
well, I know what's going to happen.
Make some sensible decisions. What?
In 2 minutes' time, we're going to hit the news. John in Adelaide says, I just want a healthcare card and I'm 67.
Right. So to qualify for the healthcare card, you can do two things. There's what we call the pension concession card. When you need to qualify for a part pension from Centrelink, it's about the income test and the asset test. There is another card called the Commonwealth Seniors Health Card. For a single person that doesn't qualify for a pension, that threshold is $101,000 per year. It's pretty high, right? And for a couple, it's $161,000 per year plus some change.
So you want to earn less than $101,000 a year.
And money coming out of your super doesn't count. I mean, it's tax-free. So most people qualify, and that gets you your pills for $7.70 a script. Good stuff.
And one last question. What if I just gambled it away? So instead of, you know, if you get your $1 million in super or 100,000 whatever, and you just put it all on a horse, you lose it.
Yep.
You're eligible for the pension.
Yep. Be able to absolutely verify what's been going on.
Sure.
People unfortunately invest in failed investments too, Rod. That's another area where the investment's genuinely written off. Then Centrelink will disregard it under the income and the asset test when that's made.
Nick, the great news is you will be back, and anyone who can get their question answered tonight will have that chance in the future. Nick, have a great time in Darwin, and thanks so much for tonight.
A pleasure, Rod, and good to hear you.
Nick Bruning.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.